Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. Thank you very much for joining me on this episode. Super excited about this one. My name is Still Palmadot. Today, I have Patrick Lang. He is co-founder and managing partner of a company called Certainty Management, Inc., coming to us from Southern California. Patrick, man, how are things?
I'm doing well, pal. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Listen, thanks for freeing up the time. Do me a favor. Say hi to everybody. Provide a quick intro, and then we'll jump into your episode here.
Well, hello, everybody. I'm, as Paul mentioned, the managing partner for our consulting firm, Certainty Management. We help companies reduce their costs, increase spend save, and we also help nonprofits raise funding. I'm a veteran, served in the U.S. Army for several years, married with five children, and happy to be here. We are busy for sure.
Anything else?
You know, I grew up in New Zealand as a kid and then lived in Utah for many years and have traveled pretty extensively, something like 30 countries and 47 states. And now we're in San Diego. Everybody says it's the number one place people want to live and we're really enjoying it.
Good. Well, I'm really looking forward to this episode. Thanks again for being here. And so, you know, Patrick, you're fairly familiar with the foundation of the podcast itself. And for those that are joining us really for the first time, you know, the entire premise of the podcast is all about mindset and intention. And that is that, and I should say in that, nothing is really given to any of us. And most of us in the world of sales or sales training or sales consulting or, you know, entrepreneurship or anything else, nothing is, most of us never thought we'd even get into this in terms of what we're doing, let alone really sustain a career in it. And you just touched on, you've got a vast, you know, path of experience with multiple countries and multiple states. And so with that said, I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. Shall we get started?
Absolutely.
All right, let's get into it then. So let's go back in time. That's what I like to do on this podcast. Let's go back to BYU. Bachelor's in English. And so when did you graduate?
So I started in 1988, but due to a two-year mission for my church to Italy, time in the military, and then working my way through college, much of it part-time, I didn't actually receive my bachelor's degree till 2000.
That has to be the longest, 12 years to get your bachelor's. That's amazing. But clearly you were not 12 years at BYU. So talk to me about 88 to 2000.
Yeah, multiple interruptions for various reasons. But, you know, I went into college thinking I wanted to be a lawyer someday. I had a big John Grisham fan and had visions of being a trial attorney. And that's what the main reason I majored in English. It's a good precursor to law. And yet during the summers, I worked various sales positions, you know, selling everything from Living Scriptures to Cutco knives and Rainbow vacuum cleaners. You know, I was just a young college kid.
Yeah.
Selling this and that. And I eventually went to work for a company called Phone Directories Company, where we sold yellow page advertising in these regional phone books, out in Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and in that area.
Now, some people can Google what you're talking about.
They probably can. It was a big company. A lot of students went to work for them during the summers. And it's a great job because, you know, we first thing we'd do when we came into town was we'd get trade with a hotel and a couple restaurants and gas station. We had no expenses during the summer. We ate high on the hog. And we were making, between my wife and me, about $600 a day as college kids. It was really good money for, you know, the 2 months we'd work, and then we'd take the month off and play, and then we go back to school.
Right.
And through all of that, I realized, oh, I was pretty good at sales. I enjoyed it. You know, money was good. And I made a conscious decision to stay in sales and pursue that path rather than go on to law school and become an attorney. honestly, I didn't enjoy school that much, so I didn't think I wanted to go for two more years just to stare at documents the rest of my life. But
you know, I had somebody on in the on the podcast previously who mentioned that he's now a VP sales, but he wanted to be a lawyer early on. And once he kind of got to that point, he realized that it's not really what you would see on LA Law or what you would see on TV. So I'm curious about your interest in law. Was it more from the pageantry of it? You mentioned John Grisham and what you saw in Hollywood versus what it actually is. Did you have visions of like, here's the bloody knife and your fingerprints are all over it, and versus so many lawyers don't even see the inside of a courtroom?
Right. I think it was romanticized quite a bit. You know, I think pageantry of it is a good way to put it. But, you know, it was a good career, I thought, you know, good way to provide for a family someday and do something that was maybe respected or prestigious, you know, depending on your opinion of lawyers, right?
Yeah. But at the time, do you recall being captivated by the OJ trial?
I remember following it pretty closely. Yeah.
I mean, it captivated the world, but I mean, more from a legal eye, given that you were interested in that, were you viewing it from that scope in terms of what they were doing and how they were governing themselves in like a real trial case that captivated the world?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. It definitely affected how I was watching those proceedings.
Gotcha. Now, you also mentioned in there that part of your path took you to, did you say a mission?
I did. I served a two-year service mission for my church, and I was called to Rome, Italy.
Beautiful.
It was really neat. You know, you don't get to choose where you go when you serve a mission. It's volunteer. You pay for it. And you send in, when you do want to serve a mission, you send in all this paperwork, and about 3 weeks later, you get a big white envelope in the mail. And it's a big day for prospective missionaries because you don't choose where you go. And so when you open that envelope, you find out if you're going to Topeka, Kansas or, right, you know, Moscow, Russia. And I was hoping to go to Europe. It's funny story. I'd been studying American Sign Language in college because I had a girlfriend who spoke ASL. And so I wanted to go on an ASL mission and speak and teach deaf communities or go to Europe. And I've always joked that I got to go to Italy, where I kind of got the best of both worlds, because they can't talk without their hands. They're always, that's how they speak. And so I kind of got the best of both, but Italy was absolutely incredible. It's one of the best 2 years of my life.
Well, I can't deny the whole hand movement. I'm Italian myself, and I don't know if I could talk without using my hands, and I don't know if I could have a meal without some bread. And that's not even a stereotype. That's just the truth. And so I'm curious about your time in Rome, because, you know, in the times that I've had the opportunity to visit Italy, even though I was born in Toronto and I've been raised in Canada, there was always a sense of like, I'm kind of at home because that's where my grandparents came from and that's where I'm from. And Rome in particular was a city that I often said that if there was one place in the world that I would love to live in, it would absolutely be Rome. But I know Rome is kind of hit and miss for some. But I like it because it's a big city and it's just littered with history, which I'm a big buff of. But I also know that some people don't like it because there's horns and it's honking and it's busy. And if you're going to go to Italy, they much would prefer a little town an hour outside of Rome with 5,000 people and just, you know, kind of have their own, you know, life outside of that. So I'm curious about what your take on Rome once you kind of got settled.
Right. You know, it's interesting because while I was in the Rome mission, I actually never served in Rome. I went there for a couple of big conferences and first day and last day and so forth. But I served most of my time in Naples, which is south of Rome, yeah, which is even crazier than Rome. It's big, crazy, dirty city.
Dangerous. Huge port town. Yeah.
Very dangerous city. And then I served in a little beach town called Pescara and a very old city called Ravenna up near Venice. And I served in Cagliari, which is out on Sardinia. Nice. I kind of went in a big circle around Rome, ended up back in Avellino, which is in the mountains above Naples. And so I spent a little bit of time in Rome, and it wasn't my favorite because I think I enjoyed like Florence better more. And
right,
Pescara, and you know, one of my favorite cities is a little town at the top of the mountains called L'Aquila. It's about halfway between Pescara, which is on the Adriatic coast in Rome, right in the middle. It's actually where they filmed the old movie Lady Hawk with Matthew Broderick.
Oh, is that right?
And a great castle there and some things. But, you know, I love the little villages with the cobblestone streets and the open markets and, you know, so forth. But Rome's incredible. Don't take me wrong. But
no, I got it. That's why I asked the question, because it's not a one size fits all, right? It's a great place to visit, but it's one of those towns I could live in. And so let's get into the 2000s then. So you talked about right off the top here that your BYU term was 12 years, but clearly not 12 consecutive. And so you had some great experiences in the 90s, and then you close the loop and you graduate with your degree. And the 2000s were pretty choppy. 2001 was September 11th, was had a ton of ripple effects, and then the whole Y2K buzz, and are the computers going to work, and so on. And so once you finally close that loop and you end your BYU experience with your bachelor's in English, talk to me, where were you, call it 20 years ago, mentally?
Well, I, as I said, I sold Yellow Page advertising during the summers and did really well, became a trainer for the company. And they basically gave us the choice of going anywhere we wanted to go the last year. And we chose to go to Alaska. That's kind of the coveted book for the company. Wow. In Anchorage, Alaska. And my wife and I drove up the Alcan, moved to Anchorage, and ended up staying there for 6 years. Ended up working for other companies, but it took us to Alaska, had an extraordinary experience. Alaska is an absolutely breathtaking area, of course. I'm a big outdoorsman. I like fishing, especially, and caught a lot of salmon, a lot of halibut, and so forth. And it was a really extraordinary experience. But ended up going through a divorce with my first wife in Alaska, and unexpectedly, she had a hysterectomy at 28 and fell into pretty deep depression and ended up disappearing. I came home from a business trip and she was gone. And
literally
have never seen her since. She said she left a letter. She said, "I love you, but I can't go through this and be married at the same time. And if you love me, let me go." And broke my heart. You know?
Patrick, did you literally get a Dear John letter?
I did. And
really?
My first name's John. So go figure. Yeah. John Patrick. But
wow. And so how old were you at this time?
I was, let's see, I would have been in 2000, so 31.
So 31, or how long had you been married?
Yeah, I've been married for 7 years.
7 years. Are you a father at this point?
No kids.
No kids. Okay, so no kids.
Trying to have kids, yeah.
But you're still, you know, 30, 31, 7 years with this person that you plan on spending the rest of your life with. I was not expecting to hear this at all from you. That first 24 hours when that happened, like, was this a joke to you, thinking, well, this can't be really from her? Or were you blindsided? Were you like, how did you manage that? Because that must have been devastating.
It was devastating. I was actually on a business trip up in Barrow, Alaska, in this little village out in the boonies, up in the tundra. We were out visiting, and it was a sales we got snowed in for a week on this sales trip, and there's a big blizzard, and I tried calling my wife to let her know we were delayed,
right?
There's no answer, and I left messages, and 2, 3, 4 days, no callback. Finally called a friend, asked him to go over and look in the window, see if she was okay, if maybe she fell and smacked her head on the counter, right, or something. Asked my bishop to go over. My bishop called me and said he'd pick me up at the airport, because I couldn't get a hold of her. I was freaking out. I was calling her family. For a week, I hadn't been able to get a hold of her. And then I got home and found the letter. And you know, she'd gone through everything in the house and divided it really evenly. And she left videos she knew I liked and kept the ones she took and left this and that. I can still remember dust lines around pictures that had been hanging there. That she took the picture, she left the ones she knew I liked, the ones that she wanted.
Wow.
It was pretty even in how she split things up, but she took off. It's interesting though, because I was recently, she eventually resurfaced and got remarried, and we we did a divorce through dissolution through email, actually. And she got remarried, and then they adopted a couple of kids. And recently I found out they were getting divorced, and he reached out to me and asked me for my insights. And because he was kind of going through the same thing that, that I went through, and just wanted some perspective. And it was kind of a closure experience for me talking with him. I actually met him in person when I was up in Utah recently. And, you know, he said, it's not just you, you know, he said it was, it wasn't just you, you know, because I, you know, anyway, it was an interesting experience.
So Patrick, talk to me about how you manage that, because that's not like you lost a big sale and you kind of go, okay, it sucked. Maybe I need to recover. And it's not like you have lost a family member, someone's died, and you kind of go, okay, I'm going to miss them, because that's part of life. And so I'm curious about how you manage that, because that must have seeped into all facets, your day-to-day operations, how focused you are, where you on with work, your mindset when it came to meeting future women and dates, and like, did you have your guard up, and did you go back to your faith to get you through this? And so I'm just curious about how you got through that, because as I said, it must have been just devastating for you.
Well, it was. It was one of the most painful things I've gone through. To add insult to injury, I later married a widow with three children, and we had two boys together. And after 9 years of marriage, she announced to me that she had married me so the kids could have a dad. And she was, she said, "You deserve to be married to somebody who marries you for you." And we ended up separating and divorcing as well. And so I'm now remarried. I'm going on 10 years, but I've been divorced twice.
Oh.
And had my heart broken both times. And, you know, and it was really frustrating for me, because I come from a family where my parents have been married for 53 years. My grandparents were married for 70 plus years. I mean, we stay married. You know, if you're not happy, fix it. You know, if you're struggling, go to counseling, work it out, you know, or whatever. And I've been divorced twice, you know, and I was a good husband, you know, so I'm not perfect by any means. Nobody is, but it was very challenging. So anyway, to put it in even more in perspective, I've been through it twice, but to answer your question, you know, I grew up believing that, you know, your attitude determines your altitude, right? I used to think that was just about, if you have a good attitude, you're going to work harder, you're going to stick to things, you're going to not give up. But I've since come to believe that it goes way beyond that, that literally our thoughts dictate our feelings dictate our actions. Mm. And we can choose what those thoughts are going to be and what they aren't going to be. Best example I ever heard of that was about two guys that got sent home from work. They had some sort of sickness. They were contagious, and the doctor said, "You need to be home away from your coworkers because it's just going to keep spreading." Well, the first guy said, "I can't take off 2 weeks of work. I'm already behind. I've got deadlines. I've got an inbox that's full." He goes, "Right. I can't do this," and he was miserable for 2 weeks sitting at home waiting to go back to work. And the other guy said, "I've needed a vacation, so we," and he said, he didn't say, "I couldn't go fishing," didn't say, "I couldn't watch movies." I mean, so he just went home and paid vacation for 2 weeks, ate a bunch of junk food, watched a bunch of movies, went fishing for, you know, and absolutely relaxed and enjoyed himself, came back to work. They both come back. They both have overflowing inboxes. They're both behind on work, but one of them was refreshed and excited, and the other one was depleted and discouraged. And I've always remembered that story. It was in one of my, you know, family science classes at the Y, but it's an absolutely true principle that you choose how you want to feel. And depending on what you tell yourself, it's going to dictate your feelings and will dictate the outcome and your actions and your energy level and so forth and so on.
You know, Patrick, I have a couple questions for you. When you, when your first marriage, when you first realized it was ending, you came home from that trip, you're back in Alaska, you get the letter, and then obviously the ripple effects afterwards. A couple of questions. Number one, how long did you stay in Alaska after that? And number two, how long was it before you met your then second wife?
Yeah, good question. I actually was going to go after my first wife. I was going to, my neighbor said she had seen a U-Haul there. So I knew she was driving down the Alcan. There's only one road going south. And so I was going to fly to Seattle and drive north and try to catch her and talk some stuff to her. And I was praying about it and looking at and waiting for the travel agent to call me back. And I was literally in my garden pulling weeds just to keep my mind from going crazy. Right. And I had a very strong experience, spiritual experience, saying to let her go. She was going to be okay. And anyway, so I did. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done, but I was told, I believe, that it was a good thing, that she was going to be all right, and it was a good thing for us. So I waited 1 year to the day, and then I sold my house and moved from Alaska to Vancouver, Washington. They say you should never make a move, immediate move after a divorce. You know, take your time, wait at least a year. And I wanted to a change of scenery. It was hard being in the same house and so forth. But I literally, and a year to the day, I moved down to Vancouver, took a transfer at work. And then I met my, it's funny because I met my current wife about a month after I moved to Vancouver. And we got to be friends. We dated, actually got engaged pretty quickly, in about 6 months. And then we ended up breaking it off. She was trying to finish school, was feeling rushed and so forth. And I apologize, there's landscapers working outside if you hear the noise. But
can't even hear it.
So we broke it off. She thought we were postponing things, and I thought we were breaking up. But Mars Venus communication breakdown. But then I met my kid's mom, this widow with these three little kids. They were 4, 3, and 1 in about April. I'd moved there in October. We met in April. And we got married in August of that year of 2002, I guess it was. And so, we were married for 9 years, got divorced again unexpectedly. And I reconnected with Kesha, who's my wife now, that I'd known 10 years earlier. And she had never been married. And we ended up getting married. And
at the time when you were, I guess you were, had met your second wife before you got married, she obviously was a mom already, as you mentioned, three kids.
Yeah.
Any reservations at the time about adopting three children? It's not usually in the cards of what we dream about as kids, about, well, here's how the family's going to go, is I'm going to inherit three kids. And I'm a child of divorce. My mom and dad have myself and my sister. My mom remarried. He had two kids. I have a stepsister and a stepbrother who are my sister and my brother now. But it's like chickens and ducks, right, together. And it's like you're trying to make this work. And even though you didn't have children from another, from your previous marriage, you've got three children and they have, dealing with the grief of no father. And I just, any reservations at the time, do you recall?
You know, I don't remember a single minute where I had concerns.
Amazing.
Largely because for 7 years we'd been trying to have kids. My previous marriage, I'd always wanted to be a dad. The kids were just amazing. They were 4, 3, and 1. So they were still pretty little. You know, her husband had cancer. He died in October. She had a baby in April. So my youngest daughter never met her father, her biological father. And so they called me daddy right from the start, almost immediately. I have a good friend who has five children as well. And he was grumbling about how he had to go through 45 months of pregnancy to have five kids. And he said, you just added water and had instant family. And I said, yeah, but you did have 45 months to get ready for five kids. You know, I kind of get baptism by fire, right? But But to be perfectly honest, I'm just saying that to joke with him because I never really felt overwhelmed by it. Yeah. I had so much fun being a dad and, you know, taking them to their little preschool the first day for daddy-daughter dates and things like that. And they were just so excited because they were very aware that their dad had passed and really excited to have a new father figure in the picture. And it was just great. It was one of the best things that's ever happened to me, for sure.
How challenging was it or was it to maintain a relationship with all five of your kids, but in particular, the three that were not your biological once the divorce happened?
Yeah, you know, it was easy at first because they would all come over every other weekend and so forth. And they were still pretty little. I mean, my youngest was five when we got divorced. He's 15 now. And so at first it was pretty good. And then my ex-wife, the kid's mom, got remarried to a total idiot who was abusive and just a real jerk. He'd get in my face on the porch and try to mix things up. And things kind of changed from that point forward. I don't really know why, because within 7 months he was gone. The day he pushed her, she fell and got a bruise on her arm. He was gone the next day. Called the sheriff. She's not one to take that. You know, he was just kind of a bully, and she realized that pretty quickly. And to her credit, one of the things I'm most grateful for is she kicked him out and got divorced. But after that, I don't know if something broke or it was just, I don't know, it was like a pivot for them. The two older kids, especially, I see my son occasionally when I'm in town. I'll take him to lunch, but he's not really a communicator. He's very focused on school, a double major, wants to work for NASA. My oldest daughter, very smart girl. She got a full ride scholarship to Wellesley College, graduated with honors. And she and I haven't spoken for a long time. She just kind of cut me out of her life. She's never explained why. I know, but it was during that time with they call them the 7 month mistake, you know, that she stopped talking to me. And so between the first two divorces and then her cutting me out of her life, it was probably the third most painful thing I've dealt with. Still trying. I send her birthday cards and gifts and Christmas and try to reach out to her, but it's been about 6 years now that she hasn't.
That's a long stretch, man. That's a really long haul.
It is. You know, I missed out on her high school graduation and her whole college degree. I know only things I know about her are through updates from the other kids. And, you know, she's amazing. We were really close when we were married. And, the hardest part has been not understanding what happened. We didn't have a big argument or a fallout. I think he said something or did something that just kind of pushed her off. And then it's easier just to ignore than to try to come back and apologize or make it right.
You know? It'd be one thing if you knew what the underlying issue was, and maybe you could address it, have a conversation about it. But when you're not even told, so what happened? Like, what did I do or what didn't I do?
Yeah.
And let's correct it, because clearly you're, you know, a willing participant here. And well, I'm sorry to hear that as well. So, but yeah. You mentioned that you're married with your now wife 10 years, right?
Coming up on 10.
10 years. And so, did you say you met in the Northwest as well?
We did. Funny story. I was working for a company called Trendwest. They're a vacation ownership company. She came in with her friend as a guest, and I actually sold her her timeshare and then invited them to go to dinner that night. And we were friends ever after that, and ended up dating, and now we're married. And yeah, she's excited because this coming March, she'll be the oldest or the longest running wife. You know, I had a 7 year and then a 9 year. And
that's right. You made it to double digits.
Right.
Yeah. And so your time in the Northwest, I've never lived there. Obviously, I'm an East kid in Toronto. And so I know the Northeast from the US and New York and Boston and Chicago very well, and Toronto, of course. But I've been to Seattle. I've been to Washington many times, and even Southern British Columbia with Vancouver and the Rockies, and like beautiful part of the world. Did you enjoy the Northwest, and what was behind your decision to actually leave, the Washington area?
Yeah, I absolutely loved the Northwest. Oregon, especially. Portland is just a fantastic town. Politics a little crazy, it's been kind of chaotic lately with the riots and things and forest fires. I mean, they've been getting hit on all sides, but it's just a really great town. Great live music, great food. Not far from the ocean. You can be at the ocean in an hour or on the mountains in an hour. I go up fairly often to visit my kids, and they come down here. I bring my boys down to visit every month to San Diego. But when we decided to move, it was primarily because my wife has some health issues and wanted to visit with a physician down here. And also the idea of being in the weather here was appealing. Oregon rains a lot, so you got to really be able to handle the precipitation. But yeah. And so I talked to my boys and I said, instead of coming over across town every 2 weeks and visiting here in town, or what would you think about coming to San Diego once a month and, go to the beach and go to the parks and so forth and so on. And I said, which would you rather have? And they both said San Diego. And so it's been really great. We've had a lot of great experiences. It's hard being further away from them because I don't get to get together with them for dinner each week and things like that. But they're kind of at that age where they want to hang out with their friends all the time anyway, So when they come down here, we get one-on-one time and really get to connect, and rest of the time we FaceTime and so forth. So
take advantage of technology, right? In the absence of the physical being there. And so Patrick, you've had, quite the unbelievable ride here. Obviously we've talked about personally, what you've gone through, everything from 88 to 2000. And then we talked about, your marriages and how you've managed both of those same scenarios, but different scenarios behind them in terms of factors. And then you find, your wife now. And at the start of the podcast, you mentioned that you were, co-founder of Certainty Management. And so I presume that is like a self-employed venture on your part. And if so, as my son is trying to get in the room here, sorry, Patrick, he's trying to get in the room, but he can't. So, but I'm curious about your venture in the business world. Are you self-employed now? Have you always been self-employed? Did you work for a big corporation at some point that we haven't touched on yet? And just talk to me about Certainty and how you got there.
No, I don't know if it's because I'm just a really slow learner or, for some reason I was supposed to be stretched and molded and, maybe the Lord wanted me to go through some trials so I could become more humble and become who I'm supposed to be. But between my divorces and so forth, I did start a consulting firm back in 2007, which was crushed when the economy crashed in 2008. I've had some really great employers, but I've also had some bad luck. I took a sales team once from $50,000 a month sales, little inside sales team, to $500,000 a sale in sales in a year. We took them all on a cruise and we came back and the doors were locked.
Oh, wow. Find
out the employer hadn't been paying their taxes and had bit off more than they could chew. And so where we thought we were going to come back and do it again the next year and break the next records. And we celebrated on this Caribbean cruise and we come back, we were all out of work. And this happened more than once to me where we've done our part and employers have screwed us, dropped the ball, made promises and not kept them, or whatever the case might be. So I finally decided again, I've made companies millions of dollars over the years and not really been taken care of like I thought we should have. And so I decided to start my own consulting business. We're an authorized affiliate for a friend of mine's company, cost reduction company. So we're the sales side of it and they do the implementation. And it's been a really wonderful ride. Challenging because we started it right when COVID hit about a year and a half ago. Not the best time to try to start a business, but very excited about what's happening. And we made a major pivot about 6 months ago that's changing everything too. So,
well, you know, Patrick, I appreciate you being here. It's been fascinating to you and I have known each other for probably the better part of maybe let's call it a year or so. And but we've never really had this depth of conversation about how you got to current state. And so I appreciate you freeing up the time. You've had quite the journey, plus minuses across the board. And so hopefully your takeaway is that everything happened for a reason. You're better for it today in current state, and you kind of process what's happened. And that kind of leads to where I want to, you know, kind of close off the podcast here. As I always like to ask anybody who is a guest, if they had one piece of advice or feedback or something that's kind of been your go-to, like what's been your foundation what when you need to maybe reset every once in a while?
Well, you know, as I was saying earlier, about mindset, about how our thoughts dictate our feelings, you know, and we can choose how to feel, even in the face of terrible tragedy or crisis, you know, we can choose the path we want to take, the direction we want to go. We all hear about 2020 hindsight, right? Where we look back on things have a clearer perspective. But I believe that if we try to have midsight and foresight, even to so as we're going through things, we can slow down a little bit and ask ourselves, what am I supposed to learn from this? You know, what can I gain from this? How can I make this experience easier or enrich it and not let it do me in? You know, I read a book once called The Oz Principle, and he talks about how to avoid being falling into a victim pattern, you know, where we're pointing fingers or saying, I don't know what to do, I'm confused. Doesn't mean you can't ask for help, but the question we should ask is, what else can I do? And keep asking yourself, because there's always something more that we can do. We might need help to do it, but they talk in the book about living above the line. You know, are you above the line? When you, as they call it, above the line, or residing above the line, you see the problem, you own it, you solve it, and you go do it, you know, and
love it.
That's been a real blessing in my life, learning that principle. And I do believe that if we listen, we get impressions and promptings and guidance, you know, to tell us where to go. The whole thing about Think and Grow Rich and The Secret and books like that, you know, it's that attitude determines your altitude is more than just feeling good and working good. I believe you actually attract into your life more of what you focus on. They say a positive thought vibrates like a sound wave 10,000 times faster than a negative thought. They've actually have technology that can measure that these days. And so through it all, with as much tragedy and heartache and trials I've gone through, I've just tried to remember that. And doors and windows continue to open up. You know, we're now helping nonprofits raise funding with what we do. That's the pivot I was referring to. That's really exciting. And just because we didn't give up, we kept asking, what else can we do? And listening for those indicators, you know, and those ideas. And as I said, doors and windows open up. If you don't give up, you can't give up. You know, life is hard.
I love it. And Patrick, it's been great, you know, listening to your story and you being so candid in terms of, you know, how you manage things in certain parts of your life. And I just, I can't thank you enough for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for the conversation.
You bet. All right, everybody, we're going to wrap up this episode right now. Remember, as I always say, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week, and stay safe, everybody.